BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show that's all hockey. The Shaw's Star Market Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers.
Presented by Shaw's and Star Market. Download the Shaw's app or Star Market app and save today. Also brought to you by Rodenheiser Home Services, Devlin Solar, and Mass General Brigham.
On Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, we lost both games, so then the big picture, you are what your record says you are, right? Yet I think both games are very winnable. A little bit of puck luck today, we come away with 2 points. Yesterday, I think there were some turning points for us. We could have done better offensively, and we didn't, and they did. I loved our compete today. We were ready to play. We knew we were in for a good, solid hockey game, and we got one. But I don't think we shied away from any of that. We didn't finish well.
That's the head coach of the Bruins, Bruce Cassidy, following Thursday's game in Carolina. The Bruins getting blanked by Freddie Anderson as we welcome you into the hockey show, along with Bob Beers and Billy Jaffe sitting in at the start here. I'm Judd Surratt, 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston should be back with us next Saturday. Let's start with the last two games, and maybe in the big picture, I know, Beersy, you and I had talked that heading into this week, that after games, and it's going to be another against Florida here tonight here at the Garden, and Carolina, two teams that are off to unbeaten starts, we'd have a better feel of what the Bruins are like here early in the season, even though the sample size is small. And heading into the trip, I know Bruce Cassidy had mentioned that one of the things he was going to focus on, how will our defense play against some of these really potent offenses here in the Eastern Conference? I wonder if we have to think about things in reverse, how the offense is playing against some of those teams defensively.
Yeah, the two teams defensively were excellent, right? I mean, Florida was real good defensively, really impressed with the way that they checked. That being said, the Bruins owned the first period. We'll go back. Bruins owned the first period. Second period, obviously, the switch flipped and Florida took over, and the Bruins had a lot of uncharacteristic errors, turnovers, neutral zone, things like that that really went against them in that period. Yet they were still down 2-1 and had an opportunity to win. And I thought Bobrovsky was excellent in the third period when he needed to be. And then they got the highlight goal by Duclair, which made it 3-1. The Carolina game, I mean, it was a good game. They played well. They generated some good looks. Freddie Anderson had their number in that game. I heard people say that, you know, you walk into these two teams, a measuring stick, well, you got outscored 7-1. Yeah, you did. So that can't be overlooked. I liked the way they played against Carolina. I really did. They could use a little puck luck right now. They haven't been able to score. Carolina's allowed eight goals going into last night, right? Eight goals they had allowed going into that game. And Freddie Anderson has been excellent. So they got to find a way to score. They have to improve their power play. That killed them in the game against Carolina. That could have changed everything. And what were they, 0-for-5? They had a couple 5-on-3s. I know one was only, 10 or 11 seconds, but the other one was a minute long. They took a timeout to talk about it, and it really struggled. So I'm very curious what they look like here on the power play coming into today. My guess is they'll work on it a little bit this morning, because the last power play they had in that game against Carolina, they made a couple of changes. They put Grizzlick out at the point, and they put Jake DeBrusque, who had a real good two-game set, by the way. Nothing to show for it, but played very well as the net front, or, you know, that guy down around the net trying to retrieve pucks when there's – so they took Hall off that. Who missed – unfortunately for him, missed a pretty ripe chance there on a pass from Marchand.
As Bruce Cassidy, I think, termed it, he called it a bunny, but what were some of your takeaways from those two games that the Bruins played?
Similar. I mean, the power play is the obvious, point the finger at. I mean, it's so clear. and you, I don't know, you know, maybe it's just recency bias, but you say, oh, they would have scored last year, the year before. You don't know if they would have. Power plays, I don't need to tell you guys, sometimes come, sometimes they go. Sometimes you have it. But I just look at, like, they're just not generating enough in general in the power play. Forget actual goals, even chances. I mean, you know, David Pastrnak has three power play shots all season. And I know we're young season, but that's his specialty. I mean,
they had one shot in
five power plays the other night, right? And, you know, your leading shot producer on the power play is Patrice Bergeron with five. And, you know, he hasn't scored yet. He had a couple of good games in the sense where he picked up assists, and we all know what he does away from the puck. But in general, I mean, Brad Marchand with one power play shot. How many games are we in now? Seven? Are we six? Seven? Six games. So they need more. Bob, you mentioned that they changed the guy at the point. I would think heading into today, Grizzlick will get the look at the, I would guess, top unit. You know, I would think that they might go with that. And the other guy, you mentioned Jake DeBrusque. He's done everything they've asked, relatively speaking, to play the way he's played. And so he deserves the chance to get up there into the middle. Hopefully he can finish. But in general, you're right, Judd. It's the reverse. The offense against those teams' defense. I couldn't have been more impressed as well with the way that how long Carolina looked. Big they looked, pushing the Bruins up the wall instead of allowing them. How good were they against Florida in that first period, using behind the net to change sides and forecheck, et cetera? After that first period against Florida, between Florida and Carolina, Bob, I don't think they got a lot of those opportunities, those forecheck opportunities, where they had those offensive zone, like 20, 30 second sustained pressures. They were good against Carolina, but I thought Carolina did a good job checking them too.
Well, that stall line was very good.
Excellent.
It was very good in that game.
Excellent.
And that was Niederreiter, who, got hurt last night, I think it was, but Niederreiter and Fast, right? That line played very well, and they've got some. You know, I don't know if people realize that some of the defensemen they have are very, very good. I love that pickup with Ethan Bear with them. I mean, obviously, Slavin and Pesci are good back there. And say what you want about Tony D'Angelo. He's played very well for them here in the start of the season.
He's provided a need, right?
Well, he took the place of Dougie Hamilton.
Right.
If he can be a
good Hamilton
teammate.
Played more minutes, right? And D'Angelo won't have to play that many minutes. I mean, he'll play a couple less than Hamilton. Hamilton was playing over 20. But, you know, Dougie's really good at the offensive end. Some days he doesn't. You know, the D zone doesn't really matter that much. So yeah, D'Angelo can keep his nose clean, and he
They're
has so
team.
Far. So far, so good. They're a very good team.
Yeah.
He's a complimentary piece to that team.
So since we're following the bankroll, boys, if you had the over-under, if you took the under when talking about the Bruins power play here for the hockey show, you were definitely a winner. It certainly came up here very early in the show. Yeah. So, Tracy, I guess with that in mind, can you play Taylor Hall's comments about the man advantage?
If you notice, we're a little bit tight with our sticks, gripping the sticks a little bit tight. I think, you know, if everyone, myself included, is feeling, you know, uber confident, that's just an easy play, an easy backdoor tap in. And right now those aren't being given to us, so we have to work for it, and we have to, you know, just put our heads down and keep grinding and figure out a way to produce, but without, you know, cheating the game.
Beersy, is that what you're seeing on the man advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, he's squeezing the stick. That's it. It's a tap-in. I mean, he doesn't even have to stop that puck, right? It's a redirect tap-in. It's a good pass from Marchand. Marchand had another one cross the top of the crease to Taylor Hall. It was a hard pass. That was in the second period. That might have been on the quick 5-on-3 that they had, if I'm not mistaken, or right at the tail end of it. And it was right across the crease. They weren't really giving him much else. The fact that Pastrnak is and I – look, this kid's—he's dynamic. We've seen it. We love the way that he plays. I thought he really struggled in the two games. He made a great move on Weegar against Florida, but he had a 2-on-1 in the third period, and I'm not sure what he saw there. I don't know.
You could almost see him thinking.
Yeah,
instead of reacting.
He had Marchand going to the net on the right side. You know, maybe he had somebody coming late. He identified something else there. He was coming down the left wing. He had a chance to shoot against Carolina. He tried to make a pass to Taylor Hall. It was a good defensive play by Sebastian Aho coming back on the back check. But he had that was a 2-on-1 opportunity in the second period that he had there. So, and they were physical on him, especially Carolina. Carolina was very physical on right from the opening
they
faceoff.
They were more physical than I ever remember them being,
Bob. Right from the opening faceoff, they were physical. Ethan Bear stepped up. You don't think that they had a pre-scout on that faceoff play that the Bruins have? Win it back to McAvoy. Marchand comes underneath and gets that pass. And they should have had a 2-on-1 against Florida. And if we would ever got a replay from the Florida TV crew, we would have known whether it was offsides or not. And I never got a chance to ask the coaching staff, because I'm sure they looked at it. But that was right at the start of the second period. They tried the same play on the opening faceoff against Carolina, and Ethan Bear stepped up, and he was right in Marchand's face.
I think for a guy like David Pastrnak, just reading between the lines some of Bruce Cassidy's comments, I think for the most part, most NHL head coaches, when it comes to skilled players, they don't want to try and get them to think a certain way. But I think early in the season, it sounds like Bruce Cassidy's encouraging him on those opportunities. If you have that, think more shot and less pass.
You should. He needs to. They need to get him going. I mean, you know, dynamic, exceptional, unique. I mean, he provides a skill for this team.
Prior to going on that trip, the Bruins played against San Jose. Mm-hmm. He should have had at least a hat trick in that game, mm-hmm. right? He misfired on a couple. He had a great move where he wasn't able to quite finish. He had the one goal, but you know, mm-hmm. he could have had a handful of goals in that game specifically. But tight checking, right? I mentioned Florida. That's the team coming in today. They've allowed 15 goals in 8 games. Bobrovsky's been excellent to start the season. Now, he played last night, so I'm
you're going to get Spencer.
Probably Spencer Knight tonight,
yeah,
right?
Spencer
Yeah, I mean, they're stingy defensively. Both of those teams are right now.
But both of those teams, Sargent, are ready, and they already did make a little statement against the Bruins. They're ready to make another one. Both those teams saying, you know, you've taken it to us over the years. This is our time. Right now, and again, I couldn't.
Well, slight advantage tonight, though. They played last night, so all right, you know.
Yeah, you're right, but early in the season.
I don't think it matters that much.
But I'm telling going quickly back to the Carolina comment, the last few seasons the Bruins played them in the playoffs, the Bruins, and I know that's going back, but they took it to them, and physically the Bruins actually were better than them. That was the most physical I remember Carolina being against the Bruins. And look, this may be their time. And I think Jordan Staal is having a big hand in that as well, leading the way, the mantra of head coach Rod Brindamore saying, we're going to start, you know, playing physically, kicking some ass, playing this way instead of being the ones that take it.
Well, that team in particular, just to stay with Carolina, because I want to go back to the man advantage. I don't know if there's a harder team in the regular season to play against because they're so fast and they suffocate you.
Yeah, well, they play like their coach, how he wants them to be. And, you know, Rod the Bod has got them flying. They're more mature now, too. They're older. I mean, give them, you got to remember, this has been, they were a bad team for a while. They've been, I guess, rebuilt, added on to.
Both of these teams have taken it on the chin when it's counted.
Yeah.
And not just by the Bruins, but, you know, whether it's Tampa and last year's playoff series with Florida and Tampa.
Phenomenal.
Was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was just great games.
Maybe the best
thing
that happened to Florida.
Yeah. And now all these younger guys have seen that. They've got a great taste of it and they want to make sure that, all right, it's our time now, just, you know, to echo. And I think Carolina's the same way. And it's some of the other teams that have had their success, whether it's Pittsburgh and Washington and Boston. And you know, now is Toronto one of those teams as well? I don't know yet. They're a little slower.
Are you playing the first group or the second group, or both?
I'm saying, are they one of those teams that's had enough? You know, and can they take the next step? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. They haven't shown that they're ready for that yet. Yeah. But
this is the year for them.
But Carolina and Florida certainly.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's early. I get it. It's very early in the season, but they are certainly showing that they
does size matter.
They're ready.
Does size matter? I mean, we're seeing the size with Florida. We're seeing the size with Carolina.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I think it does.
Yeah.
I think you got to have a mix, but I think it does. You have to have that.
Yeah. I agree. I agree.
We always talk about the nature of the player, even with size. I mean, you know, Dougie Hamilton's name came up. Hamilton's got a ton of size.
Yeah.
Did he necessarily play?
Well, how do you play, though?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, did he play to those capabilities? But the other thing I was thinking about was, I think, certainly here in Boston and everybody around the National Hockey League got a great appreciation for a guy like Adam Pellick last year, watching the New York Islanders in that playoff series and beyond.
Mm-hmm. I'll throw Mayfield in there, too.
Mayfield was terrific. But I think of guys like Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce, one on the left, one on the right. These guys are getting older, but how difficult they are to play against on a night-in, night-out basis.
They don't do it with an overly physical style, though, either. They do it with their body and their stick position and their, you know, their smarts, their intelligence. You know, and I think, you know, they'll get in your face and hit you when they need to, but it's not like a
No, but look,
bad example. But it's not like a Radko Gudas. Every time he's on the ice, you got to know when he's on the ice because he's going to step up and try to run you. It's not like that. They just play a different style.
But just look how. And getting back to my question, really more of a point. Look at the size of them. What Slavin is what 6'3", 6'4". Brady Shea, as your number four, is 6'4". They Pesci is 6'3". Skates beautifully for a big man. These guys, not only do they cover a lot of ground with their feet, they cover a lot of ground with their body, and they don't have to be that ultra physical because of how big they are. So, yeah, and that's where something where...
So then this size does come in.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I'm saying, I think that's where the Bruins will have a challenge at times in the back end. They're not as big as some other teams back there overall.
It's the Hockey Show. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. We hope to hear from former Bruin Sean Thornton after the 9:30 update. We're hoping to get in contact with him. He's in town with a book signing that he's doing. But again, if there's anything on your mind regarding the National Hockey League of the Bruins, give us a shout. We'll bring you back in a moment here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Tucci scores!
The show that's all hockey. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to The Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 if you want to join us, along with Bob Beers and Billy Jaffe. I'm Judd Surratt. It's now time for Who's Heating Up on the Ice, brought to you by Rodenheiser Home Services. Go to rodenheiser.com today to book your annual heating system check to keep your home warm all season long. I know it's not easy to talk about who's heating up after the team only scored one goal across two games, but Jake DeBrusk's name certainly came up here in our earlier conversation. He was a guy who certainly influenced both of those games that we saw.
He should have had several points. He should have had a handful of points against Florida and Carolina. I mean, the skating ability, he got behind the D, cut in, and he wasn't able to finish it off. But he's skating well right now, and that's what they need from him, and points will come if he continues to play like that. And there was I don't know if the reward is the right word for it, but they did move him onto that power play late, and that's why I said a morning skate will tell us a little bit something here if they work on the power play or at least at the very least we'll find out tonight if they continue to make that change or if they go back to the original power play.
He had 5 shots and 8 attempts in that Carolina game to lead the Bruins in both of those categories, so that's certainly a good sign. We can talk about the rest of the offense here a little bit later because the second line is certainly going to come up at some point. But again, if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. We welcome in Maria from Watertown. Hi, Maria.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Good.
You guys touched upon my main concern thus far this season, and that is the power play, a power play that looked absolutely lethal during the preseason. And then you go 0-for-5 against Carolina, which, I understand why Coach Cassidy called out David Pastrnak, but I would have liked to have seen him extend his comments to calling out his power play unit. And how do you think that can actually get resolved when we're getting basically nothing from the back end of the house? The defensemen have nothing going on offensively, and so where does that quarterbacking come from, and how do you potentially solve that? Put your coach's hat on and maybe tell me what pieces you might try to put in place there. And Bob, I just wanted to follow up with you regarding your comments last week on Brandon Carlo, and we've been waiting for this young man to have it all click together. I think he has the skills to do it, And I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet. And I think really he needs to step up and play with a bit more snarl and aggressiveness. And, you know, is that something that can be coached? Is that something that is inherent in one's natural abilities? Does it come or does it not come? So those are my questions, and I hope you guys all have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Maria.
Yeah, well, I honestly don't remember my comments about Brandon last week, but as far as watching him play, I mean, offensively, you know, he's not going to be an offensive defenseman. So you can work with him. You can work with his decision-making and, you know, what he does at the offensive line and make him a little bit better. I don't see, you know, an offensive defenseman there. So what do you have to do? You have to be a shutdown guy. Look, we just talked about Pesce and Slavin being two big bodies who don't necessarily run you through the boards. So I think you can be really effective being that type of defenseman if it's not in your nature to be give me an example, you know, a guy that wants to run you through the boards every shift. Okay. So that's not in his nature, but you can be physical without having to be overly, you know what I mean? You box out, you win every battle on the corner. Maybe you make guys pay the price when it's the right time. Honestly, I haven't had a problem with Brandon Carlo. There was one game he struggled with some of his playmaking, some of his just passes coming out of the zone, puck, that yeah. type of thing, yeah. and handling it. Yeah. But he wasn't alone. That was the Flyers game, I think it was. But he wasn't alone in that one. But other than that,
he's been fine.
He's been fine. But sometimes his shot selection at the offensive blue line, you know, when they've got a lot of pressure in the offensive zone and they've got a team on the run, and you know, there's the opposition is scrambling. They're tired. They've been out there for a while. The Bruins have fresh bodies on the ice, and they rotate it back to the point, and he kind of takes that back foot wrister at the goaltender with nobody in front of the net. It's just an easy save. Sometimes those get a little frustrating, but again, it's nitpicking a little bit for Carlo, because I think his job is to be a shutdown defenseman. He's been good on the PK this year, as far as I can tell. The PK has been generally pretty good. And he's been with Forbert for that. They usually start those two if they're fresh. So I think Carlo's a little further down the list on issues with the Bruins right now.
I get, I agree. You know, and I think when you see 6'4", 6'5", to whatever he's checking in at, 210, whatever now, I can understand the fans saying, want nasty. It's not in his DNA. We're not seeing it with that many kids coming up, but that doesn't make it okay. Would I love to see a little more snarl at times? Sure, I would. But, okay, I'm with Bob. I don't see that as being the big issue right now.
He's an excellent skater.
Yeah.
He's got a good stick.
Yeah. No, that's what
helps him defend well.
Right.
And the big body.
But if you're expecting something else, you're not going to get. You're not going to get the cross check to the
bit.
Back.
Yeah, a little bit at times, but not.
Not
well,
much.
You can't do a cross check in the back.
No, you know what I mean. just the whole.
Joe Thornton's still learning that.
Right. Yes. Well, 40. What is he? 43 years
He's
old.
He's 42. 42. I think.
With regard to the power play, I mean, the point that she makes, we touched on quickly before, valid. I mean, McAvoy has no power play shots, and you need to get the puck through. And Grizz has a couple of shots. And I again, without knowing what Butch and his guys are going to do today, I think they'll practice it. They'll go through their routine at morning skate. It'll be interesting to see if Grizzlick is out there with top unit or not. But they need to Bobby, you can tell me if you disagree. I think they hold on to it up top too long. I think they do, and I think they're becoming a little more predictable. Everybody knows they want it to get to Pastrnak, and here's the thing. Everybody knows they want to get it to Steven Stamkos or Alexander Ovechkin. They seem to rotate it over to those guys a little bit quicker than the Bruins do, and I'd like to see a little more definitive decision-making with the puck up top.
Well, Pastrnak's had some looks, maybe not in the game against Carolina. He's had some looks, and he's missing that on a few.
He has a few, yeah.
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 So, and if you think that they're holding on to the puck a little bit, that's just a sign of in-between. You know, they're in-between right now. You know, it's not bang, bang, bang. It's hold on to it, think about it,
yeah.
In-between. So, you know, a little better puck movement, maybe a little bit more movement in general. and not be as stagnant. You know, Pastrnak ended up on the right side the other day, really never materialized. That's something that they tinkered with in morning skate, but it never really materialized for them.
617-779-0985. We're going to take a time out here. Hopefully after the break, we're able to connect with former Bruin Sean Thornton, who's in town to do a book signing. But again, if you'd like to join us, anything Bruins or the National Hockey League, this is The Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Shaw's Star Market Hockey Show on the flagship station of the Boston Bruins. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Listening to the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to The Hockey Show. Along with Bob Beers, Billy Jaffe, I'm Judd Surratt. We're with you until 11 o'clock. The Bruins play tonight at 7 o'clock against the Florida Panthers. Beers and I will get the pregame rolling at 6:30. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. At 4 o'clock today at I Love Boston Sports at Faneuil Hall, Sean Thornton will be signing his new book, Fighting My Way to the Top. And he joins us right now here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Good morning, Thorny.
Good morning. How are you?
We're good. We definitely want to get into the book, but there's one thing I wanted to get to before we get into the book. I was recently sitting down with Brad Marchand, and he talked about some of the nicknames that he has had over the years, and he said you used to call him Squirrel. Why?
I actually don't know anymore. I can't remember. He kind of just looked like one.
Thorny had a signing yesterday, right, if I'm not mistaken, at Casino?
Yeah, here at the Encore. That's where I'm currently residing for last night and tonight. It did turn out. It was great. First people to see the book. I mean, the book was supposed to come out, I think, 2 days ago. Like everything else with supply chains, it got delayed a couple of weeks. So we had some advanced copies sent over because this was committed. So the people that came by last night got the first ones to have the book. I don't even have my copies yet.
Thorny, I was looking back. You spent six full years in the American Hockey League, beginning in the Toronto Maple Leaf system before moving on to the Blackhawks system. But you spent those 6 years before you got your first shot in the National Hockey League. How did that finally come about with the Hawks in 2002?
Training camp. So, I mean, yes, five, six full years in the minors, St. John's, great experience. And basically one summer, my now wife kind of said, listen, if you're going to take this seriously, you can't be going out every night. You can't be eating like junk. Like you work harder than anyone I've ever seen. You're in the gym all day, every day, and skating all day, every day, but you're just wasting it, and kind of woke me up. So I started to get a little bit more serious about my nutrition and my habits. And I went into training camp in really good, like really, really good shape. And Eric Daze ended up getting hurt in training camp. I had a decent training camp. Brian Sutter was the coach. He liked me and kept me on for the first 14, 15, 16 games or something like that. It was amazing. I'm glad I did it at a camp. I can't imagine how nervous I would have been if I got my first call up at 26 years old, like halfway through the season. Kind of felt like you're rolling through exhibition right into the season and kind of took the edge off a little bit. But that's basically how it happened.
Eventually end up in Anaheim. And all the success that you guys had there, the experience in Anaheim for you and how that helped you moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I got a little bit lucky. I mean, I had played at that point, 9 years in the minors. I had a bunch of cups of coffee with Chicago, and I said, you know what, I'm going to give it one more shot. I'm going to try one more organization. If I don't make it, I'm probably going to retire, go back home and be a police officer, find a 9-to-5. Signed with Anaheim in the off season. Same thing. Got sent down to training camp. made me the captain of Portland. And about 7 games later, they called me up and sent me back down. And 8 games later, I got called back up and was there for the rest of the season. And happened to be on a really, really good team. Small part of a really, really good team. And, you know, got to experience what it's like going all the way to the finals and winning. And once you experience that, there's nothing like it. It's what you work your whole life for. So kind of took those learnings for when I came to this city.
I got to imagine that Randy Carlyle was the head coach at the time, that he, the GM, Brian Burke, and Bob Murray, the assistant GM, who's now the general manager with Anaheim, they had to love your style.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Burkey, after we won the cup, I was in the locker room, and I went up to shake his hand and said, you know, thank you for giving me a chance. And he looked at me and then pointed at Bob Murray and said, thank him. I didn't even know who the hell you were. I think he was just giving me a little bit of a hard time. He had told me stories through the year, how he'd seen me when I was in Norfolk fighting. But he was letting me know that Murph was the one that really, really pushed for me. And yeah, Randy liked, you know, we had a really skilled team, but we had a really tough team. That's kind of how Burkey built his teams. That's how Randy liked to coach his teams. We were very hard to play against, and it was a fun team to play on.
At what point when you got traded to Boston, I mean, first of all, were you happy about the trade when it first happened? And at what point did you say, you know, this team's got a really good thing going here?
Yeah, I signed July 1st. I didn't have, I had like 3 or 4 teams that were interested. So Cam called me and said, type of player you are, this town tends to, you know, rally around or really appreciate. And that's not verbatim, but it was definitely an understatement. So I came to Boston. I'd never been here before. I didn't know one person on the team, but as soon as I got here, you kind of feel how special the city is. The team, I'd say, probably 3-4 years in to being here, thought we had legit contenders. We won the President's Cup 1 year. We were very close. We had a couple playoff series where if we were playing the right way and doing the right things, we were probably the better team and could have won, but we needed that experience. And then, there was that collapse against Philly. We brought that anger the next season into the next season. And we had that trip to Prague, Belfast and Prague at the start of the year. And the team really, you know, bonded on that trip and turned into a really special year.
Sean, you played for a long time, whether it was here in Boston, Anaheim. You mentioned the cup of coffee that you had a couple of different times with the Blackhawks. But also, even going through the American Hockey League, who were the guys that you learned most from, whether that were coaches, managers, or fellow players?
Yeah, coaches for sure. Players. So my coach in St. John's is Al McAdam. He taught me that, you know, you're on the ice for 2 hours every day. There's no, you're not a good enough hockey player to get off the ice before the 2 hour limit. And you should be in here every single day, the first guy here working hard because you're the worst player on this team. He didn't really say that, but it's true. So he, big influence there. Trent Yanni, when I got to Norfolk, sat me down. I was a little bit, I had a lot of theatrics. I was a little bit hot headed. I fought for a living and it wasn't something I was comfortable doing. So probably overcompensated in other areas a little bit. And he just sat me down and said, Thordy, like, you don't have to worry about fighting. You fought everybody in the American Hockey League. You beat up 90% of the American Hockey League or got beat up by the other 10%, but you're still here. So can you just focus on playing hockey? It's going to help you in the long run. Somebody told me that before, but it didn't really sink in until he sat me down, looked me straight in the eye and said it that way. And he was right. Those two, Mike Haviland was another coach that, we only had him for a year. He instilled a lot of trust in me, put me in a lot of situations, gave me more confidence as a player. I felt comfortable penalty killing, playing D, playing forward, didn't matter. He put me in every situation. So a lot of confidence there. Player-wise, and there's a legend named Greg Bird Dog Smith, who's unfortunately no longer around. But
sure.
He's a bird dog. He's man. Tell me, if you're going into a pile, son, going all guns blazing, you ain't big enough not to.
He did that on and off the ice.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. He was a character. So I had a lot of people throughout my career. I got to say, I'm very lucky.
I would have loved to have seen you play D, Thorny.
How
were you back there?
I played my first 4 years back, 3.5 years back there. Junior, played half a season back there. Al McAdam liked me better as a defenseman, so I kept me back there. I don't know. I thought it was back then. You just flip it over the glass if you're in trouble. So I think I was a decent defenseman. You always get it over the glass.
Even in a pinch, he didn't throw you on the back end.
I don't think I played one, like half a game in Chicago. I think Butchie was actually coaching. With a bunch of people got kicked out for fighting, and I think I played one game in Chicago on the back end. I like that. That was my position growing up. I played D like my whole life, and then I was not forced to play forward when I got the junior. But there's no spots on the back end, and if I wanted to make the team, I was the fourth line tough guy, right winger, and that was the case.
We're visiting with Sean Thornton. He's got a new book out, Fighting My Way to the Top. You can find the book at triumphbooks.com/Sean Thornton. So I look back at your fight card. I don't know if this is accurate or not, but just in the NHL, I think there were 141 bouts that you had. Any of them stick out?
So that sounds about right, I guess. I was actually in a bar here in Boston with my wife. I think I was in Cambridge, and the bartender recognized me. He's like, "Do you know you've been in 406 fights?" I was like, "What? How do you know that?" There used to be a website called, I think, dropyourgloves.com or something that counted all the AHL, OHL. That's like, that's a lot of fisticuffs. Ones that stand out. No, I mean, Riley Cote here in Boston when I first got here. Nobody, I don't think anyone in Boston really knew who I was. And then we went up to center ice and punched each other in the face and made a little bit of a history from the minors and pretty good fight. And I remember meeting, I remember meeting Ken Casey from the Dropkicks afterwards, and he was like, "Holy, I can't really say what he said." He's like, "You're an animal." Like, yeah, but I think it kind of put me on the map here. You know, there's a lot of, I fought a lot, and there's a lot of tough guys. I have respect for every single one of them. None of them are easy, and it's not easy to do that job. So there's nobody I dislike, but it was, you know, a means to an end. You enjoy sticking up for your teammates, you enjoy sticking up for yourself, but at the end of the day, you know, you respect each other.
Thorny, for people that don't know, you're working with the Florida Panthers. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your job description there and how things have really gone well so far this season for the Panthers.
Yeah, we're definitely off to a hot start. I can't take any credit for any of that. But if you see new dashers or in-ice logos, that's probably more my wheelhouse. So yeah, I'm now our chief commercial officer. I oversee all revenue, marketing, community, and foundation for the and game pros actually for the organization. Trying to drive as much revenue as possible, and you know, build our brand and get it out and grow it in South Florida. So it's been an amazing last 4.5 years. Had a lot of great things on the business side happen, learning a ton every single day, and I'm really enjoying it. It doesn't feel like work when you're getting up. Some days it does when you're not going to hit your numbers, and you're a little worried about what's going to happen. But if you hit your numbers, it doesn't feel like work getting up.
Thorny, the other night in Florida, it was a nice moment that the Panthers organization recognized not only their own equipment manager, but the Bruins head equipment manager, and that is Keith Robinson, who marked his 2,000th game as an equipment manager for the Boston Bruins. You had him for a long time. Keto's been around since 1989. I guess what makes him so good at his job?
Keto's the man. He's genuinely compassionate and cares about the players, and he brings that truth to the workplace every single day. He's a really hardworking guy and very humble. I knew it was going to be his 2000. Matty Faulkner, equipment manager, texted me trying to give him some recommendations on dinner in Florida the night before. And then we were doing that ceremony for Teddy, our equipment manager at 1500. And I got asked Bill Zito. I was like, "Hey, it's the guy on their side, Keto, good dude. It's his 2000. Do you mind if we give him a shout out?" He's like, "I'm all about it. Please make sure he's recognized." So the organization tries to do the right things.
Thorny, last thing, because I want to touch one more time on the book. And you talked about raising the cup in Anaheim back in 2007, and you had an opportunity to do that here in Boston in 2011. Well, was there a moment, either in 07 in Anaheim or here with the Bruins, when you raised that cup in Vancouver, where you had just a second to yourself to think about everything that you went through to get to this point and achieve the ultimate goal in the NHL?
Yeah, it's funny. That's how I explain it. People ask me all the time which one was better. I said they're different for me. You know, Anaheim, like you just said, all the sacrifices, all the work, everything you put in, the Christmases alone in the hotels, whatever it might be, like the 9 years and Niners getting punched in the face for minimal dollars, like it's all worth it for that. You know, the first second that you're putting that thing over your head. So Anaheim was very exciting and a great sense of accomplishment. The one in Boston, felt like I was more part of it, I guess. Like, part of helping the culture in the room, played a bigger role on and off the ice. I've been with that group of guys for 4 or 5 years. So that one probably means more to me. It feels like it just has more meaning to it. But both amazing experiences. I mean, that's what you work your whole life for. You just try and win that cup.
Game 3, Thorny, you got in the lineup back home, changed the whole complexion of the Vancouver series. Say it all the time.
Yeah. Obviously, all me. No.
I even said it when Claude was listening.
I was happy to be thrown back in the lineup. I did not like waiting and watching on the sidelines, that's for sure.
Thorny, thanks for jumping on here this morning, and all the best to you. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to see you here tonight at the game when the Bruins face off against the Panthers at 7 o'clock.
Hey, looking forward to a nice tribute for my friend Jimmy Hayes, too, so. That should be a good night.
That's Sean Thornton.
Good luck with the book.
Thanks for jumping on. And again, later today, if you want to get a chance to see Sean, 4 o'clock, I Love Boston Sports at Faneuil Hall. He'll be signing his book, Fighting My Way to the Top. And we really thank Sean for jumping on here today on The Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 if you want to join us here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on Boston's home of the Bruins, 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Restaurants. If you really love hockey, this is your show. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to The Hockey Show, 617-779-0985, and caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 gift card for Sports Etc., Boston's best hockey shop. You can find them at 1303, and that's the rest of the copy. Mass Ave. Thank you, Tracy. I appreciate it. But again, caller 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 gift card for Sports Etc., Boston's best hockey shop. Again, this is The Hockey Show along with Bob Beers, Billy Jaffe. I'm Judd Surratt. We're here with you for another hour. And we just had a chance to talk with Sean Thornton, the former Bruin, who's in town promoting his new book, Fighting My Way to the Top. And it got me starting to think about Trent Frederick and the start that he's off to. Now, not many guys around the National Hockey League do what Sean Thornton did for many years, but it also took a few years, as Thorny referenced, to become a regular in the National Hockey League, to be a trusted guy that here in Boston, Claude Julien could throw out on a fairly regular basis, a guy who helped you win a Stanley Cup. And there is an art to do what Thorny did for years, and I'm wondering if Trent Frederick is still learning that here young in his National Hockey League career.
I think he is still learning it, no question. By the way, I was waiting to hear about his hands, because 42 career goals in the NHL, and almost all of them were highlight reel. When he scored, remember those breakaway? He had a breakaway against Winnipeg, a little motorcycle kick, and he went to the backhand. Like, when he didn't score a ton, but I'll tell you what, when he scored, they were awesome goals. I'm sure he wanted to be on the shootouts more and more. He's probably getting Claude, probably chirping Claude's ear a bit here and there, but loved it when Sean scored a goal. That was a great interview, guys. Listen, I think Trent Frederick's got a long way to go. I mean, to get to that, he's been okay in some of these games early on. I think the sense that he looks a little faster to me than he did, or closing a little bit better than he did in preseason. I think that was pretty obvious. Preseason, it didn't look great in my eyes, but it's been a little bit better. It's a different game than when Sean Thornton was playing. So you've got to find a way to be more impactful regularly. You can't be late to the hit. You've got to be in on there. You got to, if you're not F1, you better be F2 and right on top of it. And you need to keep plays alive in that role now. He needs to dominate wall battles, in my opinion. Like, that's where he's going to have to be his most effective. Win those wall battles to keep offensive zone time alive for that fourth line.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, just showing up to the rink angry. That, like, you know, show up angry, be a hard guy to play against. And that comes hand in hand with what you're saying, you know, winning those battles, but also being in a guy's face, you know. And I think he has done that to a point. I mean, who was he going after the other night? He was trying to get in somebody's grill the other night. The goal scorer there from Florida.
Marchment?
Yes.
Marchment.
Exactly.
Marchment, yeah.
And then a couple guys were chasing him around. But, I just think for him, it's just, yes, get the feet moving. You've got to make plays. You can't be somebody that can't make plays. You can't be a guy that just goes out and fights. They don't need him to fight. If it happens, fine. And he's certainly shown that he can take care of himself. But it's showing up to the rink angry and being a hard guy to play against and making the team harder to play against.
Absolutely. Being abrasive. And I think Bruce Cassidy had mentioned, listen, if you're around the puck and doing the things that both of you guys are talking about, that stuff is going to find you, but
right.
The willingness is not the issue with Trent Frederick, but it's the art. Okay, so if you're in front, what do I do? If you're behind, what do you do? Depending on who's on the ice for the opponent, okay, how do I approach this shift? How do I make myself impactful in the anywhere from 8 to 12 minutes that I'm going to play on a nightly basis?
And I'd love to see it, because I'd love to see a more regular fourth line, you know, that we've always... We've been really fortunate to have a pretty identifiable fourth line for the most part until the last, 2 years or so, where it started to be a lot of different looks there. And I'd love it to get back to being an impactful fourth line.
We've got Sports Hub headlines coming up next. And then once we hit the 10 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little bit more about the Bruins. And then we'll start to dovetail around some of the other issues currently revolving around the National Hockey League. That's next. You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.